Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
And welcome everyone. Well, if you're not sleeping well, if you have headaches, dizziness, tingling in the hands, ringing in the ears, low immunity or cardiac symptoms, Dr. Kerry Crofton says these conditions could be caused by electropollution. And she's joining me around 12:30 today to discuss the latest government findings reported by the President's Cancer Panel. She'll also share some practical solutions and precautions you should take to protect yourself and your family's health. And that's coming up around 12:30 today. But first, do you ever find yourself flipping out for no apparent reason? Do you sometimes regret things that you say in the heat of the moment? Or do you work or live with someone who's calm and collected and happy-go-lucky one minute and blowing like Mount Vesuvius the next? Well, if you do, Dr. Judith Siegel has written a great new book called Stop Overreacting: Effective Strategies for Calming Your Emotions. Dr. Judith Siegel is Associate Professor at the Silver School of Social Work at New York University. She's published extensively in the field of family therapy and is a frequent presenter across the U.S. You might have seen her on Good Morning America or The Today Show. Dr. Judith Siegel, welcome to the show today.
Well, thank you, Vicki. It's a pleasure to be here.
And I was telling you before the show that they say things come into your life when you most need them. And your book, Stop Overreacting, I think this came into my life at a very timely point, having spent a considerable time with family under some tense situations and, you know, work as well. I wanted to just start by saying that your book is based on new therapy, or you say that there's new therapy out there that is affecting the way that therapists are looking at emotional regulation. Tell us just a little bit about the book and why you felt it was important to write this, Judith.
You know, Vicki, for years, and I've been in the field for 35 years, we've had many different theories and models for how to work with individuals or couples. And, you know, a lot of it has been based on clinical experience and But with the decade of the brain research, they began to do neuroimaging and really ask questions like, what happens to your brain when you're feeling a certain emotion? And what strategies actually work? So they learned that there was this amazing neural network, and that some of the functions that they know and can identify that are in the left part of your brain are not available when your amygdala, which is in your right hemisphere, is activated. And so, you know, this whole idea about radically understanding emotional regulation, what happens when we're excited or made to feel anxious or angry, and the strategies that seem to work. For the first time, we've actually been able to have people hooked up into, you know, research neuroimaging machines and actually demonstrate it. So it's actually very real science, and it's very exciting.
It is, and I'm sure we've all seen people, maybe we even do this ourselves when we get, when we suddenly overreact or get heated. Some people will like break out in hives, some people break out in blotches. It's not just an emotional reaction, it's a whole physical thing, isn't it?
Well, that's right, Vicki, and I also want to tell people that, you know, sometimes when we're overwhelmed with an emotion that we don't comprehend, we can also shut down. And that so an overreaction is an unprocessed reaction, that there has been a mixture of your memories from the past and you're overwhelmed trying to make sense of a situation. And so at that moment, your body is very deeply involved. You can go into a state of high arousal. So, you know, some of the symptoms that you're going to be discussing at 12:30, you could have also said may happen to you when you overreact. Mm-hmm. You may find yourself not sleeping well. You may have a pounding heart. You know, you may find that you're suddenly in hives, or that you have a headache. Or you might decide, you know, that there's just too much going on and you take to bed. But all of these are really response to an emotional overreaction.
Mm. You say in the book, and this is quite true, that overreacting hurts us as much as it hurts the people around us. I'm very close to somebody who is the easiest person, the funniest person to be around most of the time, but all of a sudden will blow like a volcano for no apparent reason. And I know that person always suffers themselves afterwards and beats themselves up. They often think it's an inherent part of who they are, but you say that's not true. It can be, you just talked about it being a state, and if it's a state, we can alter that state. We can unlearn the behavior. So I wonder if you'd talk a little about that.
Well, yeah, and Vicki, let me also confirm. Most of the people that I know, and I, by the way, have been guilty of overreacting myself. So I think that there are very few of us who could actually say, I've never overreacted.
Right.
And that we're usually filled with guilt and remorse. And sometimes there's very bad consequences. People have lost their jobs because of this. But it isn't only that our emotional state has created this kind of turbulence. What we know from the research is that whatever that problem is that has excited the amygdala probably should be dealt with. So it kind of distresses me that you've got a friend who thinks that this is coming out of nowhere, because it is coming from something that's very real.
Mm.
But if in the moment we're not able to access the functions of the left side of the brain, we're not able to really reflect on ourselves. So we lack self-awareness. We're not able to say, well, am I upset? What am I feeling? We're not able to use acquired wisdom and put it into a meaningful reference. And so you're not able to recognize that there is a situation here with some kind of a problem that caused you to react that you need to be responding to. But rather than go into this, state where things are they're not fully processed at all, you're experiencing the worst part of the event, the pain. You're inflicting that perhaps on people around you, and nothing good is going to come of this.
Mm. Overreacting can be a very subjective point. You say that not all overreacting, or not all strong feelings, rather, are overreactions. Would you identify what you do consider overreaction?
Well, if we had some of these machines, we would be able to actually hook somebody up and say, well, what goes on? What's the difference between a feeling and an emotional reaction? When someone is able to reflect on their feeling state, they're probably, you can sort of separate out right away that the neural network connecting the left and the right hemispheres of the brain are operating well. But sometimes people are flooded with emotional memories. So in an overreaction, you are going to see someone that's affected by incidents from the past that they may or may not be fully conscious of. And that the feeling state that gets stimulated is far beyond what the immediate situation calls for.
Mm.
So in other words, you can be in an immediate situation that does inspire very deep feelings, but that's appropriate. When the past floods you, and I'm using that word flooding as this idea that there's so many incidents from the past that haven't been processed, your reaction is a combination of the past and the present, and you're not fully aware. So it's those combinations that constitute an overreaction.
Okay. And just to clarify in my own mind here, the left part of the brain is where we think, where the emotions are. Is that correct? And then the feeling comes from the right side of the brain?
No, the emotional part is in the right brain.
Okay.
It's within the amygdala. But at that moment, if your emotions get excited so that you're made to feel fear or rage, It can create hyperarousal, as you were saying earlier. Our body reflects this, but we can feel it in our gut. Our stomach can get tighter. We can feel nauseous. Our circulatory system gets affected. Our heart starts to pound. We may perspire. So you're going to experience this in different parts of your body. You may find that your mind is also racing. Some people, their mind shuts down. They can't think of anything. Other people find themselves just having so many flashing thoughts that it's hard to really make sense of what they think. But all of those are happening without, on the left side of the brain, self-awareness, an ability to name and experience what the context and also the details of your feeling world. And we've lost touch of some of our wisdom at that moment. So that's what happens when the neural network breaks down.
Okay, makes sense. And we need those to be working together.
Well, it helps. We make, I think, healthier decisions, and we can handle situations in a much more healthy and thoughtful way.
Mm. Let's take a quick break. And when we come back, I'm going to ask you how we can stop ourselves overreacting. I want to look at a couple of examples you share in the book. You talk a lot about childhood memories in the book. Fascinating stuff. So we'll take a quick break and we'll be right back with Dr. Judith Siegel. Her book is called Stop Overreacting, Effective Strategies for Calming Your Emotions. Please stay with us. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
Intuitive dream coach Joyce Chapman says there are no little dreams, that every desire is important, and that you deserve life to its fullest. As a dream activist, Joyce has helped thousands of people gain clarity about their lives and make positive changes. She can help you too. See more information at joycechapman.com. And if you have a question for Joyce regarding your dream, email joyce@joycechapman.com. Next week on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, Vicki talks with Chansen Duval, a modern-day mystic and visionary who weaves together a haunting mystery novel with spiritual vision. Our Lady of Dreams takes you on a journey you will never forget. Vicki also talks with theater production director Dina Duncan about theater antics and upcoming Seattle auditions. Fancy yourself as a thespian? Please join us Monday at noon Pacific for Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, talk radio to help you live well, live strong.
This is Alternative Talk, 1150. You got it? Cool.
And welcome back, everyone. Welcome back. And I'm talking in this segment with Dr. Judith Siegel. She's written a really great book. It's called Stop Overreacting, Effective Strategies for Calming Your Emotions. And I think there was a Freudian slip here, Judith, because when I was writing my notes to myself, I wrote Stop Overeating. But I wanted, in this section, we're talking about overreacting, and we looked at some of the science behind it and how the brain communicates and with the body. I wanted to look in this section at some of the triggers that start this. And you talk a lot about the memory bank and things that happen to us in childhood and how this can spur a reaction in the heat of the moment. What are some of the key things we need to know about childhood memories and how this can cause us to overreact today?
Well, it's a very good question. And of course, I could spend hours answering it. I guess the short answer is that we have them. Whether you actually remember very much about your childhood or not, you've stored experiences. And in my book, I talk about a two-drawer file cabinet. And one of the drawers is your good drawer, and the other drawer is your bad drawer. And just like a file cabinet, you can only have one drawer open at a time. So sometimes when we get triggered, and I can talk a little bit more about what situations tend to trigger us, if the all bad drawer flies open, there are many situations that you have filed away, whether you're remembering them in a conversation that someone asks you, you know, just casually. But in that heated moment, and when your bad drawer flies open, these are memories that will persist in affecting you.
Mm.
Criticism, for example.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we that is something that affects many people. It's very hard. It happens at work. It also happens in your family. But as a child, we've all been criticized, and we've all had situations where we felt we were criticized unfairly or perhaps blamed for someone else's mistakes, or not given enough support. And so in those, when things happen to us in the moment, it's very easy for the drawer to fly open and all kinds of old memories interfere with, you know, the situation, adding to it.
Yeah, and it's quite amazing because, as you can imagine with the show and some of the other work I've done, I've read a ton of information on, you know, rewriting childhood scripts and all that kind of stuff. But I'll give a personal example here. I had a problem with a person. It wasn't a problem, but I just found myself getting tense around this person all the time. And I was reading your book and I thought, you know why? Because years ago, I was in a situation that was very, very stressful. And the person was in a lot of need and very needy. And the person today is different, needy, but in a different way. And I think I was recalling all of that stress from like years ago. And so I've decided to approach that a little differently now when I next meet this person.
Well, I'm really glad that you have that awareness. You know, that's one of the things when you asked me earlier about what are strategies that actually work.
Mm.
Being able to, first of all, read your body so that when you started out this example by saying that you were aware of feeling a little bit uncomfortable, a little bit stressed.
Right.
How wonderful that is. People don't pay enough attention to the fact that their neck is getting tight or that they're starting to, you know, have a physical response. That's where your body is trying to inform you that your emotional world is being stimulated. And you also had the resources to be able to stay with that and say, what am I feeling? Can I name the feeling? Where have I felt it before? And your memory banks, because you weren't over-aroused, could take you back to access an actual relationship and some discomfort that you hadn't fully processed. So being able to be self-aware and to be able to recall that this is very similar to, and the sharp, you know, connection that's been made allows you to do something that I recommend in the book. It's sometimes like Pandora's box can open, and then all the ills of the world, it seems like they're all kind of just, you know, coming out of the lid with absolutely no, we can't do anything about it.
Right, right.
But you also said, you know, I think I want to approach this differently and separate out what was from the past with whatever the situation was in the present. And that's a really wonderful strategy.
Yeah, sometimes a little harder to practice, but I think being aware of it is the biggest step, right?
Well, that's where it starts. I mean, in the book, I give other strategies as well. You know, some people don't really spend enough time with their feeling world.
Mm-hmm.
They're very analytic, and they think things out. They're problem solvers. And it can be a little bit of a problem because you had the richness of being able to go into your feeling reservoir and name the discomfort. What about it was making you feel uncomfortable? Well, this was someone who was needy, and they made it very difficult for you to set a boundary. You know, but you were able to find words to explain what was wrong. The feeling world is so rich and so wonderful, and so many people are afraid of it.
One of the things that you talk about in the book as being a trigger is too little control and too much control. And I think with everything that's been happening in the world, so many people do feel out of control in certain areas of their life and maybe try to compensate in other areas. If we're feeling too little control, what are some of the... you say that we're susceptible to learned helplessness and depression. What might we be doing to harm ourselves or to not to put ourselves in that overreactive state?
You know, I was asked this question about President Obama and whether or not I thought he had underreacted. You know, the economy is not what it should be, and very many families are affected with the lack of job security and just the changes in lifestyle that many of us have had to you know, kind of deal with. But feeling that we don't have as much control over our financial situation would affect so very many people that if in a moment of feeling flooded and vulnerable,
mm-hmm.
You know, they may feel that in a small incident of losing, feeling out of control, perhaps someone disappoints them, doesn't follow through with a plan, or someone, I think in the book I give an example of you go to pick up a Chinese food delivery and you get someone else's order by mistake, but you don't realize it till you're home.
Mm-hmm.
All of those are single incidents, small triggers. But if they make you feel that you're insignificant and that you have no control over the things that you want to in your life, it can unleash a huge emotional explosion.
Yeah, and I've definitely run into some of that when I'm out and about in town. People seem a little less patient than they used to. You say that, one of the things I definitely want to get out before we have to leave you today is, if we're living with somebody who overreacts, if we're working with somebody who overreacts, how do we cope with that? Because that is as difficult to cope with as if we're the one doing the exploding. It always leaves me in a like, where did that come from? And, how do I best deal with this?
Well, again, all of the research that we have that's done through neuroimaging shows that emotions are contagious. So at the moment that your friend or coworker is the music that you had on, freaking out?
Freaking out.
at that moment, when their right brain is going into a state of high arousal, it's actually stimulating your right brain, kind of like a tuning fork.
Uh-huh.
When someone's trying to, work with the piano. The worst thing that you can do is take this insult or upset and personalize it and have a reaction of your own. That's fire meeting fire. That's not going to help.
Mm.
What the best thing that you can do is try to understand that your friend or coworker needs a little bit of help calming down, and that whatever the problem is, if they want to scream about a deadline that's come and gone or whatever it is that they feel insulted by, that the conversation will not be productive when they're in this state of agitation. So what you can do is acknowledge that they're upset, that you care about what they have to say, but that you just like to wait until both of you are a little calmer in order to really understand the problem.
Yes.
Buy a little bit of time, but let them know that you're not rejecting them and you're not dismissing the problem, but that, maybe they're more, when the right brain takes over, a person loses self-awareness. I work with couples, and I've seen people melt down, and I say to them, how angry are you right now on a scale from 1 to 10? And they could say, I don't know, 4. And they're at a 9 or a 10. And they've lost that self-awareness. It may be that in that moment, the person who's offending you and upsetting you has very little awareness the extent to which they're enraged.
Mm. Great advice. And this is a really great book. I highly recommend this to anybody who's either dealing with this situation themselves or has a loved one who's dealing with it. The book is called Stop Overreacting, Effective Strategies for Calming Your Emotions. And Judith, I know you have a website where people can find out more about you and your work on this. I believe it's stopovereactingnow.com.
That's right. And it's been just a pleasure talking with you, Vicki.
And it's been a pleasure talking with you. Thanks for being with us and sharing such great information.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
And my guest again, my guest again is Dr. Judith Siegel. And coming up next, we have Dr. Carrie Crofton. Please do stay with us. We'll be right back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
Take it easy, take it easy. Don't let the sound of your own wheels drive you crazy.
If you missed a show on Conversations Live, check out conversationslive.net for dozens of free podcasts. Topics range from health and healing to business and career growth, from personal development to creativity, adventure, and the challenges of the human spirit. See conversationslive.net for talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. conversationslive.net, making a difference one word at a time.
Do you have legal questions? Need to know where to turn?
Hi, this is Rick Gregrick, your host of Northwest Legal Compass.
Northwest Legal Compass will address your questions on a variety of legal topics, including estate planning, asset protection, real estate and business planning, and more. The legal and accounting staff of Gregrick and Associates are dedicated to providing you with superior legal and tax services. Their integrated counsel is geared to the achievement of your goals.
Visit us on the web at rjglegal.com.
Be sure and tune in every Friday at noon here on Alternative Talk 1150.
Hi, I'm Andrea Kay, America's leading career expert. I know it's going to be a great conversation when Vicki St. Clair asked me to offer my career advice on her show. Vicki asks thoughtful questions, she's thorough, she works hard to bring you great guests who walk their talk with information and solutions that can lift your career and better your life so that you'll live well, live strong. My advice? Tune into our conversations and all the interviews on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair for thought-provoking insight and tips on the things that really matter in your life. And visit AndreaKay.com, that's Andrea, K-A-Y.com, for information about my books and loads of free practical advice and inspiration for your career.
You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to help you heal and stay healthy.
Real people, real life, real radio. Really. Alternative Talk 1150.
And welcome back, everyone. Welcome back. This is Conversations Live. I'm Vicki St. Clair. I have to apologize for my voice today in case you're picking up my croakiness here. Just one of those things today. I want to just take 1 second to let you know before I introduce Dr. Kerry Crofton that we have a guest coming on August 9th, J.A. Jance. She's a mystery writer, and I know she's extremely popular up here in the Northwest because every time she talks, that's standing room only, it seems. But she's coming on Monday, August 9th to talk to us on Conversations Live, and I wanted to let you know that she's actually here in Seattle on Tuesday, July 27th at 11:30 a.m. over at the Seattle Mystery Bookshop. She's also on Tuesday, July 27th at 2 o'clock at the Bellevue Regional Library. She's got a busy day because then at July 27th at 7 p.m. she's at Third Place Books up in Bothell. And then the other dates are in August, and I'll give you those later on, August 9th, when she comes on the show. If you missed any of those times, please just drop me an email or give me a call, vicki@conversationslive.net or 800-495-7617, and I'd be happy to give you the specifics of those. All right, so coming up next, if you're not sleeping well, if you've got headaches, dizziness, tingling in the hands, ringing in the ears, low immunity, or cardiac symptoms. My next guest has written a great book called Wireless Radiation Rescue, and she reveals how these and other conditions can result from exposure to radiation from cell phones, cordless phones, wireless internet, and some other devices, which we'll discuss in just a moment. Let me bring on my guest. She's Dr. Kerry Crofton. She's a health educator and the director of Wellbeing International. She has a doctorate in health psychology and has 30 years of professional work in clinical practice, directing a biofeedback clinic, and developing and delivering wellness programs for air traffic controllers, commercial and fighter pilots, and other people in high-stress occupation. Welcome to the show, Dr. Kerry Crofton.
Thank you so much, Vicki.
And your book, tell us a little bit about this up front, just why you wrote this book, why you thought it was important. You wrote it, I know, for the general public and for the healthcare professionals. So obviously, we're not in tuned with really what's going on. What was your motive in writing the book?
Well, as consumers, we're not getting the information we need, Vicki, to make the best choices for our families about wireless devices. And I discovered this when I was researching the exposures at my daughter's school, which included high-voltage power lines, a cell tower nearby, and a wireless network in the school.
And so you spent 5 years researching this book.
And writing.
Yeah.
And writing.
Yeah, not an easy task. So this is something you obviously feel very strongly about. And I mention that because there are opposing viewpoints out there. And often they come from wireless technology companies, as we might expect. There are some doctors who also say there's not really enough scientific evidence to support the claims. Tell us a little bit about the President's Cancer Panel, because that was a panel, they put together a report, and wireless technology was actually mentioned in that report.
It was, and what they said, and which certainly the leading experts that I have communicated with about this issue and about the book, is that we must adopt at least the precautionary principle. So what the panel said is there is enough evidence to indicate concern. We need further research. And as you know, it could be 10, 20 years before we have the long-term double-blind study. Of course, where will we ever get control groups that are not exposed to any
right.
of this radiation?
Right.
But what I came up with as a health educator and as a parent is that there is evidence to really cause concern. And there was enough evidence to convince me that there is a problem. We need these safer solutions.
So let's look at some of the technologies we're talking about, pretty much anything that's wireless. So the obvious are cordless phones, cell phones, PDAs, wireless networks, baby monitors, electric hybrid cars. What else are we talking about? Did I cover pretty much most
of
it?
Well, I think that's probably more than people want to know. Once we understand the basics, is that anything that is communicating wirelessly is creating a strong field of this microwave radio frequency radiation that has been shown to cause leakage of the blood-brain barrier, suppression of the immune system, neurological and cognitive effects. This is where, as you mentioned, I have a background of working in aviation, and one of my concerns is that aircraft going wireless, yes, it's convenient, but there are not only health risks, there are safety concerns. So you people in Seattle, one of the great aviation centers of the world, I really encourage you, talk to your airlines. You do not want to go online in the sky. It has significant risks.
Mm. Some of the symptoms you talk about of electropollution, I mean, it's almost a page long. Abdominal pain, inability to focus, nausea, metallic taste in the mouth, panic attacks. The list goes on, and obviously some of these ailments could be attributed to something else.
Absolutely.
But then the conditions as well, that's a page long, too. That's
right.
And that involves everything from Parkinson's disease, thyroid gland disorder, adrenal overload, cardiovascular disease. The bottom line is we really don't know enough right now, do we, to say, are you erring on the side of safety, or are you really convinced that that it's harmful to us?
I'm really convinced, Vicki. And the top experts that I brought together, including a cardiologist, Dr. Steven Sinatra, who says that for so-called unexplained cardiac symptoms, including arrhythmia and tachycardia, the first thing he looks for now is cell phone and wireless radiation exposure.
Wow.
So the long-term cancer risks, they are significant. There is clear evidence of only 30 minutes a day over a 10-year period increases your risk of brain cancer anywhere between 40% to 140%, depending on which study you look at. And most of our young people now are using these devices much more than 30 minutes a day, and with harmful effects. Some of them are, you know, sleeping with them under their pillows, using them as alarm clocks.
Mm-hmm.
This is really a concern. We need to learn to use all of these devices more safely.
Yeah, and I want to get to that in just a moment, Carrie, because I know that's your primary concern in writing this book. You're concerned about our safety. You're concerned about the safety of our kids in particular, because they're obviously going to be exposed to lifetime use. But I found this article in Time magazine, which was really interesting. And there's a scientist at the University of Washington And he'd been asked about, you know, are these studies true? Are they not true? Because there is this ongoing debate all the while. And he said that there's a lot of evidence out there to support this. And his studies go back to 1995, which is really quite shocking, because I know in other countries, governments have gone round to their citizens and told them about these dangers 8-9 years ago. And we still haven't really been told that by our government. So why do you think that is? Why are we behind the learning curve there? Why is our government behind the science that you're finding now?
One of the real problems is that the international standards, not just Canada and the U.S., but international standards are so far out of line with the science as to be thousands of times too lenient. And so everyone will say, you mentioned the industry, or, you know, you could talk to your children's school, or, you know, the companies that want to make aircraft wireless, they all say, well, they falls within the government regulations, you know, the standards that are approved. The problem is that these standards are not proven safe, not protecting us, and not in line with the science. So, yes, those need to change.
Yeah.
Nobody needs to think too hard to imagine the power of the wireless lobby.
Yes, exactly. And I've certainly done enough shows on this show alone to know that government standards are behind the scientific curve there. It takes forever to get anything moved, right?
Yes. And all of us are being affected while we're waiting. So the question is, as a parent, are we willing to wait until all of the scientists and all the governments agree? How long will that take? How long did it take with tobacco? And so I'm acting now.
Well, good for you. I want to take a quick break, and when we come back, I want to look at some of the ways that we can help protect our children in particular, because obviously if a parent buys a baby monitor, they think they're buying this for the safety of their baby. They want to hear what's going on. So we'll talk about that and much more when we come back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, and my guest in this segment is Dr. Kerry Crofton. Please do stay with us. We'll be right back.
And then we'll take it higher.
Love wildlife? Then make a real difference by helping PAWS care for sick and injured wild animals. Volunteers help feed and clean the animals until they are well enough to return to the wild. Sign up today and help save a wild life. No experience necessary. All training is provided. Visit PAWS.org or call 425-787-2500.
Hi, this is Julie Forbes. Join me on Wednesday afternoons from 2 to 3 p.m. for the Dog Talk Show, an evolved perspective on life with dogs. Listen to discussions on dog-related topics and call in to voice your opinion or ask my opinion about your dog. We will talk about everything from dog behavior to pet food to dog training programs in prisons. The Dog Talk Show, an evolved perspective on life with dogs. I'm your host, Julie Forbes. Tune in Wednesdays from 2 to 3 p.m. on Alternative Talk 1150.
Thanks for joining us on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. If you have comments or questions on any of our shows, we want to hear from you. Email info@conversationslive.net. Call Vicky toll-free at 800-495-7617. That's 800-495-7617. Or leave a message at our special listener voicemail box, 206-414-6159. That's 206-414-6159.
Outside the box, outside the norm, inside your radio. Alternative Talk, 1150.
Oh, Lord, we're gonna rock down to Electric Avenue, and then we'll take it higher.
And welcome back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. And my guest in this segment is Dr. Kerry Crofton. She spent 5 years researching and writing a great new book called Wireless Radiation Rescue, Safeguarding Your Family from the Risks of Electro Pollution. And Kerry talks about what we need to know about safeguarding our kids and ourselves. I know that as a mother, Kerry, you are extremely passionate about getting this word out to other mothers. And one of the items on your list of instruments, wireless technologies that causes this electro pollution is baby monitors. Talk to us a little about that, if you would.
Yes, one of the leading experts in the entire world, actually, is in the UK, and he wrote this section of the book, and he said the last place you want to put any of these new digital baby monitors is anywhere near a baby. And I thought, how are we, as not only mothers or parents, but grandparents, supposed to know if we're not being told by the government, we're not being told by the manufacturers, where are we supposed to get this information that what we need, and we may have to go to a garage sale, is we want the analog ones. They're much safer from a health risk point of view.
Mm-hmm. And the same is true of regular landline telephones, right?
Yes.
We want analog, which I was just saying, it's quite hard to find an analog phone now.
Well, even though, Vicki, if you get the older, they were the 900 megahertz ones, the base of those cordless phones only emitted this harmful radiation when you were actually speaking on the phone. The problem with the ones now, the 2.4, 5.8, the 6.0 ones are so strong. I got radio frequency readings off them, similar to a microwave oven that was powered on.
Wow. That's kind of scary.
So there's lots of good reasons to go back to a corded landline.
Right.
And as I said, I'm very concerned that many people that I talk to now say, well, we don't even have a landline. We just use our cell phone.
Mm-hmm.
And these are people that have children in the home.
Mm. Now, Bluetooth used to be that people said, oh, use a headset, but you don't advocate even wireless headsets.
Doing that section of the book took us as long as anything. We went through a whole series of headsets, and we rated them from best to worst. And the best is, of course, to really limit your cell phone use and use a speakerphone. Mm-hmm. After that, there's the wired headset. The wireless and the earpiece phones are not really recommended. Of course, probably better in some ways than holding a powerful new cell phone PDA up against your head, right against the ear canal that goes to your brain. This, once you understand what's the exposure, that's the last place you want to put it. Well, the really last place is anywhere near a pregnant woman.
Mm-hmm.
If you see a pregnant woman who has a cell phone, PDA, a wireless laptop, anywhere near her abdomen, near her being, very gently try to let her know her baby is being exposed.
Okay. There's a quote here from Dr. Graham Blackwell, who's a chartered engineer and the advisor to Wired Child. And he says that if your laptop, cordless phone, or mobile phone can pick up a signal, it means that your body and brain cells are receiving those waves as well. And they're different from radio and TV waves. So we don't include those in what we're talking about here. Is that correct?
That's right. And that's how we came up with the title, you know, the wireless radiation rescue, because it is this wireless radiation, these pulsed and jagged waves that have these effects. As you said, there's a whole list of them. It's because it's affecting the whole body, every system in the body.
Right. You've got a list of 10 safer guidelines for mobile phone use and PDA use. I wonder if we can take a look at some of those. One of them is, well, we just talked about how few people have landlines these days, but if you get a call on your cell phone, you're at home, is say, can I call you back on my landline? Let me call me back on my landline.
Yes, Chris, you may have to get a landline first to use that one, but it's well worth it.
Right. And use a low-tech, lowest SAR-rated phone. Talk a little about that, if you would, just so we know what we're looking for, because I've read this consistently, Kerry, that the manufacturers have been told, government regulations say, they have to put on packaging, they have to warn of the dangers, but it's usually in such tiny little print that everybody disregards it. So if I'm buying a new phone, what am I looking for?
Well, this may require a shift in attitude. What people are looking for now is something that's cooler, sexier, more apps, higher powered equals higher radiation equals higher risk. So once you've had what I call the wireless wake-up call, then what you're looking for is a lower tech with a speakerphone, and you don't surf the net with it. If you want to surf the net, you want to do that with a wired internet access. All this mobile online, doing your banking, getting the news, watching a movie, this is really exposing us to way too high levels for way too long.
Mm. So what about in my studio, for example, everything's wireless. My printers are wireless. My laptops are wireless, as are most people's. Even if I'm not using my laptops, but my wireless connector is still on, is that impacting me?
Yes, it is.
Good to know.
Good to know. That's right. And I encourage people, every wireless device you take back to wired, you're reducing your exposure. So your keyboard, make it wired. Your mouse, make it wired. Your internet connection, make it wired. And then you also have to go into your computer and disable that it's looking for the wireless, because even if you think that you're not using it, your computer is emitting pretty strong field when it's looking for it.
Mm. As you said earlier, this really is going to take a whole other different way of thinking, because these are all things that I loved when I had my first wireless keyboard and my first wireless mouse. And I know I'm not alone with that. It really is going to take a whole new thinking.
Some people actually experiencing tingling in the hands. It's one of the symptoms. What I learned in this research, Vicki, is that even if we are not feeling the symptoms, we're still being affected by the exposure. And the challenge with this form of pollution is we can't see it. We can't, most of us can't feel it, but we're all being affected. But conversely, the good news is that people really feel benefits when they reduce this exposure and go through, as we set out in this plan, the room-to-room audit, each one of the devices, implementing the safer solution. People report sleeping better, they're not getting the ringing in the ears, not having the dizzy spells, and even not having the same cardiac symptoms.
Interesting. One of the things you say is use your phones outside of a car, train, elevator, airplane, any confined metal space. Why is that? Does it encourage the waves to bounce around? I mean,
yes,
what's going
exactly
on?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And also, because remember when I told you about the concerns about wireless and aircraft, is this wireless radiation has been shown to have cognitive impairment effects.
Okay.
Not what you want with your pilot at 37,000 feet.
I don't think so. I don't think so. This is interesting. Keep it fully charged. If it has to amp up more if the battery is weak and or if the reception is poor. That's an interesting point. How did you figure that out?
Correct. Well, I didn't do the technical research, but I brought the best people in the world, and that's their recommendation, because they've tested the levels. They've tested that, you know, as I said, when your cell phone has to amp up, it's giving you greater exposure.
Mm.
So we can keep the convenience. We can keep these devices. But unfortunately, we've never been told what the risks are or how to use them more safely.
Right. So just use them a little differently. And, of course, you discuss all of this in your book, Wireless Radiation Rescue. And this, we've talked about this, but it bears repeating, I think, because I've done it myself, slept with my phone by my pillow when I've been in a hotel room. I used it as an alarm under my pillow when I've been traveling. You say keep your phones away from your sleep zones. Use a battery-operated alarm to wake you up. And especially with our children.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, all brains are worth saving. And
yeah.
It's the children's ones. I know we think our teens are hard-headed, but in fact, the skull is not fully formed. The brain is more aqueous. So we really do need to protect our children. And so many of these things, as you've said, Vicki, that the tips and strategies that I've given people, these are not expensive. How much does it cost to buy a little travel battery-operated alarm clock? I think they're about $6.
Mm-hmm.
Travel with that. Keep it by your bed. Please don't use any wireless cell phones, any of these PDAs, or your laptop or anything as an alarm clock. Power it all off at night. If you have to have wireless network in your home, then at least put it on a power bar and just turn it on when you need it, or power it off at night. Everybody will benefit.
Yeah. And I just wanted to talk about this. Dr. Andrew Weil made a comment in your book, and he said it's vital to focus closely on the most recently published studies, the ones that show the effects of longer term exposure, because so often we hear a quick soundbite on the news. It sounds great or alarming about action we're supposed to take or not take based on some study, but very rarely do they ever mention who the study was paid for, who paid for the study,
yes,
how long the study was done for, and if it looked at long-term results. So what are some tips there for us when we're hearing this information and reading reports? What do we need to be looking for?
That's fairly simple, Vicki. You follow the funding.
Follow the funding. Follow the money.
Yeah.
It's always about the money.
I went through all sorts of stages, believe me. First of all, I was into attraction with all of, like you. I mean, this technology is cool. It's fabulous. It's so convenient. Then I went to complete outrage when I discovered that in the 70s, there was a group that sent this, Dr. Becker, who wrote The Body Electric. They were warning the U.S. federal government in the 70s about the adverse health effects.
Mm.
Here we are 30 years later, and still consumers were filling our homes, schools, offices, cars and airplanes, trains, with all of this technology, and nobody can prove that it's safe.
Mm. And I guess that includes my new toy, my sat-nav, my GPS, right?
You know, the GPS is not as bad as some things.
Oh, good, because I love it.
So there's some good news for you.
There's some good news.
Electric hybrid cars, we need to shield those batteries, because you put your kids in the back seat of your hybrid car, they're sitting in a very strong electromagnetic field.
Mm. Interesting. Well, this is all great information.
One more thing, fluorescent light. When I travel now, I have to take my own incandescent lights because the hotels don't even have them anymore. Fluorescent lights, yes, they're green. They conserve energy. We need to find other ways to conserve energy. Go back to your incandescent lights.
Oh, interesting. I want to ask before we sign off today, I mentioned earlier that I remember my mother calling me, gosh, years ago, probably eight, maybe more years ago, and saying that the government had mass mailed leaflets to everybody in Britain, warning of these dangers. We've, you know, constantly heard from cell phone companies that no, there's no danger here in the U.S. What can we do to make sure that we're getting good information and that we hold our government's feet to the fire? Because as you mentioned early, wireless lobbyists, I'm sure, are pretty heavy.
Yes, and we're concerned about them and their children too.
Mm-hmm.
We need to all work together here. This is not an us and them thing. This is what Dr. Sinatra calls the greatest medical threat of our time. There is clear evidence. We really need to look to these safer solutions.
Okay. Well, good words to sign off on today, Dr. Kerry Crofton. I thank you for being with us. Where's your website? Where can people find out more about you?
It's radiationrescue.org.
Okay, and Dr. Kerry Crofton's book is Wireless Radiation Rescue, Safeguarding Your Family from the Risks of Electro Pollution. Thanks for being with us today, Kerry.
Thank you so much, Vicki, for alerting your listeners.
Yes.
Thank you.
And I want to thank you for tuning in today, and thank you for putting up with my croaky voice today. I apologize. Nothing I can do about it. But I'm going to go home and have some honey and lemon now. And we'll be back next week. If you wanted to get J.A. Jantz's visit times to Seattle, you know where to reach me, info@conversationslive.net or at 800 495 800-495-7617. That's 800-495-7617. Thank you for being us. Live well, live strong.